time recording the shiur, as you can tell, in silence. It's relatively quiet, easier shiur to record than the live buzzing based medrash in the mornings. I forgot to press the record button this morning, and I felt bad about it. Just haven't had a chance to record till late this afternoon. So my apologies, but hopefully it'll be a quieter shiur. Moshe goes through four rounds of resistance. HaKadosh Baruch Hu selects him for the grand mission of liberating the Jewish people. And he resists, and in each stage he resists for different reasons. The people aren't ready. Paro won't listen. But now it's the fourth stage of his resistance, and this is what evokes Hashem's anger. And he resists, he's reluctant, because he's a stutterer, because he's heavy-tongued. He's Aral Sfasayim Kavad Peh, which aren't exactly the same, but he's not a great orator. And he's not the one to travel. He's not the one to adopt this mission. And he stresses, Gam mitmol, gam mishilshom, gam me'az dabercha elavdecha. Yesterday, the day before, from when you were speaking to me. Interestingly enough, the Ramban quotes Rashi, this indicates that it was a long, drawn-out process of negotiations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to convince Moshe. It was actually, if you calculate, depending on how you calculate, Tmol, Shilshom, Azdabercha, Levdecha, you can even come to the conclusion that he was there for 7 days, which is ironic, because this was the mountain that one day Moshe would spend 6 days preparing for the seventh day of Har Sinai, preparing for Mount Torah. So now he's waiting, takes him 7 days just to agree to this mission. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds to Moshe, and the response is, and Hashem tells him, well, you happen to be lucky, because Misam Peli Adam, Miasum Ilaim, Ochere, Shopikeach, Oiver, Lonech Hashem. Well, it just so happens, I mean, I'm making it humorous, that I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I create speech, and I create hearing, and I create sight, so it's me. So Moshe is worried, and Hashem says, you've come to the right location, in our terms. And we'd all expect the next pasuk to be, and therefore Hashem says, you know what? I'll heal you. I'll heal your speech imperfection, because I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu who delivers speech in the first place. So, of course I can heal you, and we can solve this problem, and you can just move ahead and take care of this mission. And it doesn't happen. Hashem says, go travel, take the mission, and I will put words in your mouth. V'harisicha asher tedaber. V'dibarta elav v'samta sadvarim b'piv v'onochei empicha v'impihu. Not only that, your brother's going to help you. Aaron, he's less of a stutter. He's more eloquent, more greater facility in speech. But I'll be basically directing both of your speech. And I'm not going to heal you. What's happening? And of course, you sense this already. The Moshe expected the healing because mi'az debercha. I've been speaking to you all this time, Hashem, and I'm finally convinced that I'm getting past all my hesitancies, but I'm expecting you to heal me, and you're not. Mi'az debercha elavdecha. So the Ramban tackles this issue, and the Ramban provides two different approaches. I'm going to list each of them, and then I'll slightly elaborate on the Ramban's second approach. The first approach is based on the Medrash, that Hashem intentionally did not lift Moshe's speech impediment because the speech impediment was associated with a miracle. What was the miracle? So the Medrash narrates the story of Moshe as a young, cute, adorable, handsome, circumcised baby that everyone in the palace was just gaga about. But this little baby had a lot of ambition and would always walk around. Everyone knew that this baby could become something one day, and it had a very, very unnerving, this child had an unnerving attraction to the crown. It would always wear the crown and walk around with the crown on his head or play with the crown. And everyone thought it was really cute, aside from Pyro sages and astronomers and sorcerers who said, and they actually correctly said, this man will one day usurp your crown or defeat your crown. And the truth is they were right. The great irony is that sometimes Jewish salvation is born and raised by foreign foes. So there's a big debate that ensued, what to do with this ambitious baby who had a thing for crowns. And some wanted to kill Moshe, some wanted to spare him, until Yisro, again, ironically, one of Pyro's advisors, who would later become this baby's father-in-law, suggested the following compromise solution. Hold out a tray with a golden crown on one side of the tray, and a coal, burning coals on the other side of the tray, and see what this baby is more attracted to. If it's attracted to the crown, then evidently this is too ambitious a baby and must be put to death. Whereas if it's attracted to the coal, then nothing to worry about, which is an interesting test. Why would you put a crown in coal? Just put a crown in something else. And obviously, if I had to choose between a crown and a coal, I would choose the crown. Even if I weren't ambitious about being the king, then I don't want to be burned by the coal. But it was an interesting test, and that medrash requires its own elaboration. Moshe, of course, cute Moshe, chose the crown. He was about to put the crown on its head and seal his own fate and send himself to execution. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu dispatched Gavriel the Malach to move Moshe's hand unwillingly from the crown to the coal, touches the coal, puts the coal in his mouth, and burns his lip, burns his tongue, and is unable to speak properly, stutters, or is unable to speak properly. So as sad as it was that Moshe wasn't a great orator, at least naturally, as sad as that was, it was still better than the other fate. Had he not been redirected towards the coal, then Moshe Rabbeinu maybe would never have survived, and Gula would never have occurred. So there was a mace associated with Moshe, and because of that, and his speech impediment, because of that, Hashem didn't want to remove it. Now, why not? Why? Just because a miracle happened with that caused a speech impediment, but now he needs to be a better orator, a better speaker. Why not remove it? Is it to humble Moshe, to make sure he doesn't become too self-aggrandizing? Is it the irony that Paro will remember when Moshe approaches him in the palace? He'll remember this is the boy who became a stutterer, became maimed, or at least maimed in his mouth, unable to speak properly because of my test. And sadly enough, my test didn't work because he's still here to retake the crown, or at least to defeat my slavery agenda. It's hard to know. But the Ramban has a different idea. The Ramban says that there is another continuation to this story. When Hashem says, oh, by the way, Moshe, you have a speech impediment, I'm the person who delivers speech. Well, one conclusion is that Hashem should say, and I'll heal you. But the other conclusion is that Moshe should daven to Hashem for healing, for a speech repair. And he doesn't daven. And because he doesn't daven, Hashem is slightly angry with Moshe. And the question then becomes, why doesn't Moshe daven to Hashem for healing? So the Ramban says he doesn't daven because, again, psychologically interesting, because he'd rather live within the limits of his handicap and thereby exonerate himself or acquit himself from this mission that he's frightened to take. So as long as he can remain incapable physically of being this leader to challenge Paro, doesn't have to challenge himself. It's hard. The consequences of reaching beyond our limits, of davening to Hashem for things we want, well, when we receive those and we have greater potential and we're more greatly empowered, that may also challenge us to greater agendas and greater responsibilities. And sometimes we hold back on our tefillos. We refrain from tefillos because we're more comfortable in mediocrity rather than hoping for success and then facing the consequences of that success, the moral consequences of gratitude to Hashem and trying to parlay our success and our facility and our faculty into avodas Hashem. So that's a fascinating Ramban. Moshe is basically saying, I'd rather be incapable because it's more comfortable. And again, this is part of Moshe Rabbeinu's learning about Hashem, learning about Jewish mission, learning about Jewish leadership. This is a constant refrain of the Ramban throughout Parsha Shmos, and Moshe is just a starter. He's a tiron l'nevoi. He's a rookie, as we would say in our jargon, an amateur, not in a derogatory sense, but he's just learning the ropes. At this mountain, he doesn't get close to Hashem. He has to remain at a distance and take his shoes off. When he returns to this mountain years later, he'll walk up into the Arafel, walk into the fire. Moshe can't look. He only sees some mysterious bush that doesn't burn. Ultimately, Tumenas Hashem Yabed. He'll see Hashem, so to speak, more than any other human being. Tumenas Hashem Yabit. I think there's a different aspect, and it's again part of Moshe's learning curve. Not just that he feels more comfortable in a limited profile without expectations and without responsibilities, but he just doesn't yet understand the power of tefillah. No one does. There's a gaping hole in Sefer Shmos, and it's the gaping hole of tefillah. And slavery has defeated tefillah. And Napi Kabbalah, the terminology for this is that Dibur had been suppressed. But for those listening who aren't conversant in Kabbalah, including me, the non-Kabbalah. See, the value of Kabbalah is that every single statement in Kabbalah has a correlative statement in non-Kabbalah, in the world of physics and psychology and experientialism, because every single system is created by Hashem, and every system is stacked. They're all parallel to each other. So whatever terms exist in Kabbalah have, and this is one of the implicit foundations of the Sefer HaTanya, that the Sefiros of upper worlds correlate to internal faculties, internal features of human identity. And we don't have to travel the heavens and the cosmos to encounter the aspects of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's emanation. We can just look into our own identities. And it was hard to imagine tefillah being effective because they had lived through 210 years of slavery, and consistently the Jews just don't daven, to the point that Chazal have to re-davening back into Shmos. In Parshas Kisavo, we see Es Mitzrayim is summarized, Vayishma Hashem Eskolenu, Vayarasan Yenu, Vanezakel Hashem. It doesn't really happen in Shmos. The closest we come to davening in Parshas Shmos is after Paro dies, Vayanchu B'nei Yisrael Min HaVodah, V'tal Shav HaSamer Elokim Min HaVodah. We're screeching and groaning and moaning, and that was taken as a tefillah. And how that is seen as a tefillah is a totally different question. But in the broader view, it wasn't clear, it wasn't evident that tefillah had impact. And part of what we'll see in Parshas Va'era, where Moshe davens for the removal of plagues, is he's teaching Paro, teaching the people, and it's fair to say teaching himself, learning himself, how powerful tefillah will be. And one day, he won't just be a great speaker, he'll be an amazing davener, and he's going to be someone that saves the Jews through his legendary davening. So it's a really fascinating Ramban, and I'm happy I had the opportunity to record this better late than never.